Welcome and thank you for standing by. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. All participants are in listen-only mode until the question and answer session of today's conference. At that time, you may press star one to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Lauren Gashis from NOAA. Lauren, go ahead.
Thank you and good morning. I am Lauren Gashis with NOAA Communications. Today, you'll hear from Dr. Louis Uccellini, Director of the National Weather Service, and Dr. Vijay Talapragada, Chief of the Modeling and Data Assimilation Branch within NOAA's Environmental Modeling Center. Together, they'll share with you the exciting news about our latest upgrade to the Global Forecasting System, or GFS, as we will refer to it. We will also refer to this upgrade as version 16 throughout the call. A news release about today's announcement will be made available and I think is now live on NOAA.gov. And following today's remarks, you'll have the opportunity to ask questions of our experts. At the conclusion of today's call, if you have any additional questions or questions on other topics, please contact me at lauren.gashis@noaa.gov, which also appears on the media advisory, or by phone at 202-740-8314. With that, I'll turn it over to Dr. Uccellini.
Thank you, Lauren, and thank you, everyone, for joining today's call. I'm pleased to announce that we have completed the implementation of the GFS version 16.0 today. I'm really excited to share with you that the National Weather Service has made several significant upgrades to the NOAA's flagship weather model, the Global Forecast System, or GFS, as Lauren mentioned. When we announced our upgrade to the Global Forecast System in 2019, we described it as replacing the engine of a car. With today's upgrade, we are adding more horsepower to that engine and more, actually more upgrades to the entire car as we move forward. These upgrades, which include doubling the vertical resolution in the model and fine-tuning the model's physics algorithms, will boost weather forecasting capabilities across the U.S., including hurricane genesis forecasting, modeling for snowfall location, heavy rainfall forecast, among other weather applications from the short-range weather forecast all the way out through week two, all in our efforts to fulfill our mission of saving lives and mitigating property loss. Today's announcement marks the first major upgrade to the finite volume CubeSphere FV3, as we term it, dynamical core-based GFS, which replaced the spectral dynamical core in June 2019. The GFS with the FV3 dynamical core brings together the superior physics of the global atmosphere with day-to-day reliability and speed required of the operational numerical weather forecast systems. In addition to advancements in the now operational GFS model, today's upgrade also establishes a strong foundation for further planned enhancement by concurrently modernizing the Global Data Assimilation System, or what we refer to as GDAS. This effort will allow the model to ingest more data from geostationary and polar orbiting satellites, as well as flight-level wind, temperature, and moisture observations from aircraft. These advancements not only provide better resolution and accuracy to our models, but also set the stage for the future upgrades and are a big step towards advancing NOAA's operational global forecast capability using the Unified Forecast System framework that will streamline, not only modernize our model systems, but streamline our entire model suite. And within this that framework, we are engaging the research community through a cloud-based approach using GitHub, and we look forward to the research endeavors that result from this community effort and subsequent advancements to our operational model. Finally, the Unified Forecast System framework, which is becoming our basis for all our operational models and represents an ongoing effort to leverage the expertise of that broader weather community and expedite the R2O pathway, this implementation for the first time allowed us to couple the GFS to the global wave model that's used not only by the United States, but by other global entities as well. So advancing the UFS is our further commitment to support the larger research community while also fulfilling the requirements of the Weather Act, the Weather Forecast and Forecast Innovation, or what we call the Weather Act of 2017. So with that, I'll turn it over to Vijay.
Thank you, Louis. My name is Vijay Thalapragada, and I'm the Chief of the Modeling and Data Simulation Branch. As Dr. Ricciolini mentioned, there are several notable upgrades that are now built into the GFS version 16 that became operational today at 12Z. The foremost is the doubling the vertical resolution in the model by increasing the number of vertical levels from 64 to 127. These are the upgrades to the vertical resolution for the first time in almost 18 years. The previous upgrade to 64 levels occurred in 2003. With this upgrade, the model top for the GFS is also raised from about 55 kilometers to 80 kilometers, which means more data for the upper atmosphere and more vertical levels throughout the atmospheric column that are available to our users. Raising the model top and increasing the vertical resolution has a direct impact on improving forecasts in the upper atmosphere, including sudden stratospheric warmings and better representation of lower tropospheric processes for improved near-surface forecasts. In addition, for the first time, GFS will be coupled with a global wave model called WaveWatch 3, as we mentioned, which will extend current wave forecasts from 10 days to 16 days and also improve the prediction of ocean waves forced by the atmosphere. This coupling with GFS and the wave models will also streamline the National Centers for Environmental Prediction, or NSET, production suite by consolidating the atmospheric and wave forecast data and distributing them together. This is an important step for us organizationally as we continue to streamline our products and production suite under the Unified Forecast System framework. This upgrade also includes new data simulation techniques to produce more accurate initial conditions for making forecasts. Additionally, we are implementing advanced data simulation algorithms that will allow us to use more observations from satellites and aircraft, resulting in increased precision and accuracy of representation of the initial state of the atmosphere. Improvements to the atmospheric physics will enhance the prediction of the tropical cyclones, extreme weather events, snow and precipitation, and weather for aviation. NOAA's Environmental Modeling Center conducted retrospective and real-time testing of GFS version 16, covering a part of the 2018 hurricane season and the entire period from May 10, 2019, all the way to the current day for a comprehensive evaluation of the model upgrades. The GFS version 16 showed improved forecast skills in many areas, including hurricane genesis lead times, snowfall forecasting, and the prediction of the extreme rainfall events. Now, GFS has a better representation of the upper atmosphere and much improved forecasts in the stratosphere. Significantly, there are improvements in precipitation forecasts for the United States, with about 15% improvements in the five-day lead time, about 10 to 15% improvement in tropical cyclone intensity and track forecasts in the Atlantic Basin, about 36-hour more lead time in predicting tropical cyclogenesis, and general improvements in predicting winter season snowstorms. For example, the recent winter storms in Colorado were well captured and predicted by the upgraded GFS version 16 compared to the operational GFS, with more accurate timing, location, and magnitude of snow forecasted for Colorado multiple days in advance. Like Louis said, we are adding more horsepower to the engine with this upgrade. The atmosphere is discretized into vertical layers. Precise information of vertical winds, temperature, and moisture is important for our stakeholders like the aviation industry. GFS and NOAA's other weather forecasting systems and models are developed by our team at the Environmental Modeling Center in College Park, Maryland, working together with our colleagues from NOAA Research Laboratories and with an increasingly broader academic and research community. NOAA research scientists work with our team of scientists at the Environmental Modeling Center to develop improved data simulation algorithms and assimilate more observations and to improve representation of physical processes in the Earth atmospheric system. It is worth noting that there are now approximately 2,000 GitHub users that are accessing our operational model codes. So we're already seeing the value of making data and codes open for the community to use, and we look forward to that ongoing collaboration. Thank you.
Thank you, Vijay. With that, we'll move into the Q&A portion of our call today. Operator, if you would, please let our reporters know how to get into the queue to ask their questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1, unmute your phone, and record your name clearly. Your name is needed to introduce your question. If you need to withdraw your question, press star 2. And again, to ask a question, press star 1. And looks like our first question comes from Seth Borenstein. Seth, your line is open.
Yes, thank you. Is it possible you can take this for me and translate what this means for the average person who is a weather enterprise consumer? Are we looking at improved, first off, where is the biggest improvement? Is it in extreme events such as the snowstorm and the extreme rainfall and hurricane Genesis, or is it more in the day-to-day forecast? And can you possibly go through again when the EMC, you know, looked back 2 years or year and a half or however many years it was, what kind of percent improvements you had in terms of the two-day, five-day forecast and extremes? You ran through a lot of, Vijay ran through a lot of numbers very quickly at the very end, wasn't able to catch all of them. So, you know, just give a sense of how much of an improvement are we seeing, and is it mostly in sort of the extremes? And how much more was, how much better in terms of percentages, how and where was it better on the Boulder snowstorm?
PJ, you want to handle that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for the question, Seth. So I kind of provided some numbers. I can repeat them with more precise information that you're looking for. We have looked at multiple metrics that include the global variables like the geopotential height, that are standard metrics for our global evaluation. But we also specifically focused on extreme events, including the tropical cyclones, snowstorms, and the improvements are pretty significant with this upgrade. Based on our 2.5-year retrospective experiments, starting from May 10, 2019, all the way to current day, and also an additional hurricane season for 2018, we found that about 10 to 15% improvement in the tropical cyclone track and intensity forecast in the Atlantic Basin. These improvements are on top of what we already made advancements with the current operational GFS. So especially at the longer lead times, these improvements are pretty prominent. We reduced some of the biases we have and improved the intensity forecast further so that the global models now can provide how strong the storms will be 5 to 7 days in advance. In terms of cyclogenesis, this is the, another hot area where we have to predict precisely where the tropical cyclones will form. And we found that with this GFS version 16 upgrade, we can provide about 36-hour more lead time in predicting where the tropical cyclones will form. And in general, there are significant improvements in the precipitation forecasts, which include winter storms and the summer season, spring season rainfall. Those improvements are about 15% at the five-day lead time. And the precise location, magnitude, and intensity and timing of these snow forecasts were noted in many case studies that our evaluation group has looked into, including the one in Colorado that happened in the recent couple of weeks ago. So those are general improvements. We have a very comprehensive assessment of all these improvements that were documented, and I can share the link to your website where these documents were provided.
That would be good, especially if you can tell us the difference between old GFS, new GFS on the Colorado storm you know, here's what the old GFS forecast, here's what the new GFS forecast.
Right. So the new GFS has actually predicted the arrival of this significant weather event to Colorado, I think at least 24 to 48 hours in advance compared to operational GFS, which was slow in the beginning. Both were caught up with the short range, but GFS V16 provided additional lead time and also provided better location and timing and intensity of that snow that fell in Colorado.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Rebecca Fisher. Rebecca, your line is open.
Hi, thanks so much. I'm wondering if you can say a little bit more, and it's probably this question is for Vijay, about why what happens in the upper atmosphere is important for predicting what happens closer to the surface.
That's a very good question, Rebecca. I think, you know, the atmosphere is an integrated system, Earth atmosphere system. Kind of miss the information from the stratosphere in our current operational system because it was only up to 55 kilometers in the vertical, and also the number of levels that it's kind of a resolution. You know, the horizontal resolution, we call it in kilometers, like 13.5 kilometers currently. That's the kind of grid box that we resolve on the surface. But as you go in the vertical, it's also important to understand what's happening as we go up. And so we doubled the vertical resolution, added more layers in the top of the atmosphere. We extended the model top to almost mesosphere. And what happens there has a direct impact on how the troposphere or the middle atmosphere interacts, and then how middle atmosphere can influence the surface. So it is a continuum, and we are trying to resolve the whole atmospheric column more precisely and more accurately. And as you know, the stratospheric jet streams and the sudden stratospheric warming, like the temperature changes that occasionally happen, they all influence how the middle atmosphere behaves and then how the surface weather conditions evolve. So this is very important for a global model. And with this upgrade, we are actually having higher resolution in the boundary layer near surface and also in the upper atmosphere, and this is a significant upgrade.
Yeah, and this is Willie. I'll add on to this as well. Vijay noted the jet stream systems are a very important part of the overall atmospheric processes that not only affect the track of these storms but actually affect their continual development and then decay. So if of course that's all gets concentrated just below the magnitude of the jet is maximized just below the tropopause, and then on up above, the stratospheric influence is also important. So getting the higher resolution there critically affects that. And then in the lower troposphere, it's the vertical distribution of latent heat release. It's not just, you know, predicting better rainfall or snowfall. You have to be able to deal with the latent heat release and its vertical distribution, which can feed back very effectively, if done right, into the overall development of the storm as well. So getting the vertical resolution increase is important to these types of systems in many different ways. Thank you.
All right, our next question comes from George Waldenberger. Your line is open.
Hello, thank you. To what do we owe the upgrades to? Is it simply an increase in computing power and data assimilation techniques? And where are these supercomputers located? Thank you.
Well, okay, so, yeah, you take the first part, go ahead.
Yeah, so the increase in the vertical resolution is possible because we have sufficient computing power, and our software engineers and the scientists work together to optimize the system in such a way that it can fit into our existing resources without changing the way we deliver our products. So So that's kind of a scientific and technological excellence that we were able to demonstrate. The model scales linearly, so double the vertical resolution means twice the cost of running the model. And also we made several changes to the data simulation such that we can add more satellite data, more aircraft data into our initial analysis, which is important to have better forecasts.
And the computers are located in Reston, Virginia, and Orlando, Florida. And they have the same infrastructure so they can back up each other.
Okay. And we don't have the exact location here in Orlando of that, right?
I don't have that at the tip of my fingers here, no.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Doug Kammerer. Doug, go ahead.
Yeah, hi guys. Thanks for doing this. In looking at the models over the past season, one thing that was abundantly clear was that at up towards 3, 4, 5 days out and beyond, the models were predicting way too much precipitation. And you take the GFS, for example, of the Colorado storm that you mentioned. I mean, the GFS is putting out 4 to 5 inches of total precip out that way, and of course, you know, that's 5 times normal for this time of year. So looking at something like that, did the model get better? Denver, by the way, picked up 2.8 inches, so still an incredible amount of total precipitation. But is the model better now? Did it do better predicting precipitation? I mean, we've had that here in the D.C. metro area as well, where the models pretty much are doubling what the actual storm brings, and they're doing so up to about 3 days out.
BJ, do you want to handle that?
Yeah, sure, Louis. So, the improvement in the physics that we described in our earlier remarks, they include changes to the boundary layer and radiation and the gravity wave drag. They are all important for improving the cloud representation. And as you noted, the operational GFS has a high bias towards these extreme events of rainfall and snow. This new model has reduced those biases. So we have improved the skill by reducing those biases and improving the timing and location. That means the forward movement of these storms are better captured in version 16 compared to the operational GFS. There are still some issues that we have to understand, like how the model predicted variables for snow, rain, and hail and ice and gravel is converted into precipitation types. So those are post-processing issues. I think there is a room for improving how we post-process the model output to better reflect on, you know, generally we use 1:10 ratio for predicting mm-hmm. the hydrometeors, and we can revisit that. There may be opportunities to improve how we can interpret the model results that translate into the variables that you are describing.
Great, thank you. My second question would be with rapid intensification of tropical cyclones. Did you notice any kind of an increase in that kind of prediction?
That's a very good question. This is a global model, so that means it still is not at the resolution where we need to predict the rapid intensification.
Okay.
Model runs at 13.5 kilometers. So, but there is an additional point I wanted to make. This model provides initial and boundary conditions to those specialized hurricane models that NSEP operates, like the HWARF and the HMON. And when they got the initial conditions and boundary conditions from the new GFS, the rapid intensification forecast from those hurricane models has really shown big improvements compared to what we have currently in the operational HWARF, driven by the previous version of the GFS. So there is an indirect improvement in the RI prediction. And on top of it, GFS itself is capturing the general intensity, the magnitude of the storm intensity is better captured by GFS V16 compared to version 15.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
The next question comes from Topper Shud. Your line is open.
Thank you. As Doug mentioned, it's a great opportunity to hear this fantastic stuff. My question, though, is can we put it into terms? I know, Louis, you mentioned horsepower earlier. Can I put it into terms for my viewers, like, how much horsepower is it? Let's give them something, you know, to, like, be able to kind of grab onto and understand the increase of computing power and what this means. So can we talk about it in sort of simpler terms that, hey, this is really good news. Your taxpayers' dollars is doing great things.
Yeah, there are different, Doug and Topper, glad to hear from you again. It's been a while since I think we sat in the same room and able to discuss
these
topics. It's interesting in terms of measuring success. I think people are familiar with the anomaly correlation coefficient. And Seth asked the question earlier about the extreme versus the more general forecast. If you look at the last 31 days, there were 8 days in a row in which this model outperformed all the other models we compare, including the Euro, the UK Met, the Canadian, the Navy model. So all of these things are important, okay? And then there are other periods during that where it's clearly not above those other models, but it's above the current operational model. So you have to have this overall dynamic, that's a dynamic measure, that anomaly correlation. You have to have that to get better forecasts, and it has been considered a gold standard in ways of measuring, the success. So that's one way of looking at it. The other thing I would note, however, it's the investment in observations, it's the investment in the computers, and it's the investment in the science that brings us to this place. And one aspect of increasing this vertical resolution to handle the physics of these storm systems better and the dynamics that both generating and responding to these storms is that we're still providing it to you in the same time slot that you get it, for example, for the media, right? If we weren't doing this with respect to your time constraints, in your scheduled newscast, and we tried to double the time it takes to do this, first of all, we wouldn't have the four times per day cycle, which continually updates and gives you the trend of how these numerical predictions are operating. So I think when you look at the investments that are being made, it's the computer, it's the observations, it's the science behind the models. We're giving you this information in the same time slots that allow you to get the information out to the general public in a timely manner. If we get this to you after you've been on the air, and people go to bed, like that storm in 2000, right? What good is it? People wake up to a big surprise. That's not where we want to be. So I think we're getting you better forecasts with day-to-day forecast and better forecast for extreme events on a timely basis that allow people like you to operate your part of the enterprise and get the information out to the public that they can then act on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, our next question comes from Scott Sumner. Scott, your line is open.
Okay, thank you, guys. And actually, I think you kind of touched upon part of my question here a second ago, but I'll ask it anyway. How does the new version now, and I have to say I love looking at the 16 version modeling, compared to the Euro? The Euro seems to be, in my mind, one of the upper standards for so many years, and I think you always want to try and beat the top. How does this version of the GFS, how close does it come now with getting an accuracy for in comparison to the Euro?
Well, this is Louis. I'm looking at we have the one measure with respect to the anomaly correlation coefficient, and they're still leading the pack on that. And over this, we look at it over a 31-day period in terms of computing the numbers, and and they're still there. But we're, you know, you've seen these models all converging in this zone, within an envelope and staying in that. With this GFS version 16.0, like I said, we had a period of time during the period in which the Pacific or the AO, the Arctic Oscillation, was really strong, very strong flow, and we were outperforming all the models. We haven't seen that with any of our systems, right? So in general, we're catching up, I believe. The point is and this was a very important part of our initial readout, we're positioned now to improve our front end of the model with the data coming in and especially the data assimilation. That's our next big task here. And we've got to deal with our data assimilation system next. And I believe we will really start seeing even more consistency and accuracy once we do that. The European center model is still up on top.
Okay. And I don't know if I came in a few minutes late on the conversation. We talked about precipitation and hurricane forecasting, flooding. What about the temperature scale? How is that improving there as well?
DJ, you want to handle that?
Yes, Louis. So the temperature forecast, both at the 2-meter and the 850 millibar, toward the vertical, we have seen reduced biases. That means improved forecast skill. And we have not measured the exact percentage, but in general, particularly over the corners, we reduced the seasonally varying surface temperature biases that the previous model exhibited. So we made improvements, especially in the Great Plains region and in the West Coast, and also in the Northeast and the Southwest areas. So these are the zones that we generally monitor in terms of temperature scale, forecast temperatures out to 10 days, and there are significant improvements in some of these regional temperature forecasts. Across the globe, there are general reductions in the biases for both humidity, temperature, moisture, winds, and humidity.
Okay. Well, thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
Our next question comes from Carly Smith. Carly, your line is open.
Hi. Thanks, guys, for doing this. I am trying to find where I wrote down my question. So I wanted to double check that you said these upgrades anyone can see now as of 12Z today. And then again, is this being able to add more data because of the additional computer and capacity processing space that y'all announced last year?
BJ, you want to handle that?
I can talk about the data volume. So with this model vertical resolution increase, the general impression is that we have to have twice the amount of data going out. But we optimized our data distribution in such a way that we did not add much in terms of what the users will receive to conserve the bandwidth. And on top of it, we changed the data format from NetCDF to compressed NetCDF, which is going to allow us to improve the efficiency of data distribution, data packing. So the net increase in data volume is negligible because of all these engineering changes that we put in and still be able to provide additional information like more number of vertical levels and more precision in our data.
Louis, do you want to address the question about more data because of computer upgrades? I know that's a little bit different.
Yeah, that's the data input. And we, because of, the way we have the front end, we did some work with the data assimilation system in the front end to be able to accept more of the satellite data and also more of the aircraft data, which is available now. So we've got that in there. And if there's anything added to that, I'll have Vijay address that, but that was the main aspect of the data that we're actually ingesting into the data assimilation system.
Okay. Our next caller is Bernadette Flakey.
Hi, it's Bernadette with Flakey. Thanks, guys, for these updates and congratulations. I was wondering, and I don't even know if there's an answer to this since it is a global model, but when you added the increased resolution vertically in your testing metrics, has that shown up an improvement in forecasting and mountain forecasting, such as orographically driven precipitation?
So I can answer this question. When we added more vertical resolution, we added more near the boundary, near the Earth surface, in the near surface regions, like up to the top of the boundary layer. That includes most of the orographic aspects of the resolution. So when we added more resolution, we also had to improve the gravity wave drag due to orography. And that resulted in those improvements that we cited, about 10 to 15% improvement in the precipitation. Actually, most of it is coming from the orographically influenced precipitation.
Great, thank you.
Our next question comes from Seth Bornstein.
Yep.
Seth, your line is open.
Thank you. Louis, I'm sorry to keep coming back to this, but I'm not quite sure I understand this. Would you say it's fair that for the average person consuming weather forecasts based on the new GFS, is this going to be more helpful to them in their day-to-day forecasts in terms of temperature and in general rainfall or not, or is this going to be more useful to them when it comes to extreme events such as heavy snow, hurricanes? And also, can you give us an estimate on how much the cost for these upgrades were?
So I would say on the first question, it's not an either or, it's an and. We're working on our daily forecasts that are used by our forecasters and by the entire enterprise, actually, in creating their forecast and forecast services to specific users. So I think in terms of the use of this, this is going to have a fundamental impact on the basis of the forecasts that are provided day-to-day and will be increasingly useful in that regard, and also in the extreme events, which are clearly in a category by themselves because there's a lot more you know, preparation for those types of events and response to them. In terms of the cost of the upgrade itself, you know, there's a tremendous amount of science that goes on in this, both within NOAA and outside of NOAA. And clearly, you know, our efforts, you know, with respect to supporting our Environmental Modeling Center and the various test bed activities that go on in all the centers, and in fact, engaging the larger research community to help assess these models. So it's hard, you know, it's hard. I'd find it hard to put a finger on it, but I would say that the investment in the computers themselves to, you know, do the research to operations and then run these models are, you know, in above $50 million a year. But the point is that they're there running our models, and we build our R2O process into them. So it's hard. It's hard for me to put a finger on the delta just for this upgrade.
Thank you.
But I want to assure you, Seth, that this is for the general day-to-day forecasting and for the extreme events, and you got to get both right.
That looks like that was our last question in queue.
Great, thank you so much. That will go ahead and conclude our press briefing for today.
You can find the news release on NOAA.gov if you have not seen it already. And if there are any additional questions, please contact me again at my email, lauren.gacious@noaa.gov, which is available on the media advisory, or on my phone at 202-740-8314. Thank you again for all joining us today.
That concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may disconnect at this time. Speakers, please allow a moment of silence and stand by for your post-conference.